This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour, Brock and Salk is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. We're down at Seahawks facility today. Looking forward to talking to Bobby Wagner at 8:30. He'll be in with us for a little while. So because of it, do an early version of Good News, Bad News, No News at 8:15. So things will be moved around a little bit. But I hope you're having a good Monday. We certainly are after a fantastic weekend here in the Northwest. Great weather for the most part. And Mariners doing their thing. Looked like there were a lot of people down at Safeco all weekend.
Over 35,000 a night.
Yeah, that's good to see.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. And baseball is funny, man, because I was saying to you during one of the breaks, like, man, it's pretty close to being a bummer of a weekend. You know, there's one similarity, and we got to golf together on Friday, which was an absolute blast. You and me, and oh, it was so fun. It was, you know, the weather held off okay, and you know, you had a shot there, I think, coming out of a bunker that thankfully clipped the grass and like rolled to about 8 feet. You had another shot where you just hit it too good. You know, you hit an 8-iron like 160 yards, and sometimes you hit a shot really good, and you get a bad result, and sometimes you hit one really bad, and you get a good result. And isn't baseball in so many ways kind of like that?
Yeah. How about the game they won? Because Healy ends up hitting the ball at the end of the bat for a little bloop single, and then you get a C9.
Yes.
I mean, you know, and then other times you strike the ball as hard as you can, and it goes right at the third baseman, and you lose the game because of it. So, yeah, there's no doubt. Process really does matter in baseball, because over time those things will start to work
right
out. But if you get too upset, two up or two down over a few of those results, forget about it. Regardless, three wins the way they got them this weekend was important. For a team that had lost Robinson Cano, say what you want about the emerging core of this group. Robinson Cano is still... He's still the sort of nucleus.
Kind of the glue guy in the middle of the two of them.
Because it's not like he's this old veteran. It's not like the Felix situation where the skills have been deteriorating and you're wondering how long he can hang on. Robbie's been great this year, and he's so cool, and he's been the leader of this team. And since he's been hurt, I think one of the guys you look at immediately and say, okay, well, how will this guy react? Obviously,
right.
Nelson Cruz, who's now been hurt himself. But the other is Gene Segura, who's Robbie's best friend. He's kind of been under Robbie's wing. And since he got hurt, Segura is 12 for 29. That's a .414 average.
That's pretty good.
He's had a couple of doubles, a triple, a home run that came in the same game, and four steals, which also came in the same game, including that walk-off yesterday, the hit yesterday to win it. And as I said, I was part of the tease. I don't know that any of those were his biggest moment of that stretch, because the thing that probably jumped out to me more than anything else was the first night. First night that Robbie got hurt, or the next day, right after he got suspended,
mm-hmm.
and they get the walk-off win at home over Texas mm-hmm. with Heredia coming up with the big hit. And I don't know whether you noticed, but the first guy was not D. Gordon sprinting out of the dugout. It was not Ryan Healy. It was not those two Energizer guys that everybody has pointed to. And obviously, it couldn't be Heredia in that spot. It wasn't Ben Gamble. It wasn't Mitch Haniger. It was Gene Segura who came tearing mm-hmm. out of that dugout to go congratulate his guy, Guillermo Heredia. And it looked like leadership to me.
Yeah. Well, the key word there, Mike, is looks. And I think Kyle wrote this last night to us on the email. We've all kind of hit on it through the first, you know, over 40 games now. I mean, you're past the quarter pole. These things start to add up. You're going to go to Oakland this week, and then all of a sudden you play more games at home. You're going to be a third of the way through. This is going to be past Memorial Day. And the looks we're getting is the looks of more fun, more energy, more encouragement. It is infectious, right? It is Healy and Gordon. It is Zunino. And, yes, I think it is this guy, Segura, who is gotten his deal, you know, a good deal, I think, now on paper for the Mariners. You know, he got his $75 million. He didn't get $200 million. He's going to be here for some time. You know, he transitions. He bounces around a few places. He absolutely is good friends with Robbie, which leads to a dynamic trade here. And, you know, he said it to Danny Dave and Moore on Friday. He's just feeling good about the game of baseball. He's loving where he's at, and he's loving to play. And I think we're all kind of realizing that and feeling that and watching him play.
I just go home, and I can't wait to the next day to come here and play baseball, because now my love for the game, it came back, you know. It came back, even if, you know, I'm 0 for 4 or 0 for 20, still, I'm still going to feel a love for the game. That was the problem, that before I don't feel that kind of love. I go to the field, I was kind of lost, I was kind of powery, I was kind of like, I don't care what happened. Now I'm care.
Hmm. He was lost. He was pouty. He didn't care what happened, and now he cares. I don't know how much people know about Gene Segura. His past is an interesting one. I mean, he was a big-time prospect, a second baseman with the Angels. Jerry DePoto traded him to Milwaukee. He started to have some success there. He lost his son, young son, in what you know obviously would be a traumatic event for anybody. But from everything I've heard about him, and I don't know him well at all, I've maybe talked to him a couple of times at the most, he was affected by it even more than a lot of people, to the point where it really changed his personality quite a bit. And mm-hmm. and that's not to, I don't know, it's not a situation I can relate to. So I don't mean to judge anyone in that spot, certainly, but... by all accounts, it changed him quite mm-hmm. a bit externally, not just internally. And he was not a lot of fun to be around for a while, and not just a year, but for longer than that.
Well, he lost his love, you know, the love of a child and a 9-month-old, and it puts into question everything you want to do. Yeah. Why am I doing this? Do I even want to play a game anymore? Right. And having some friends that have walked through this and the loss of their children, it just brings everything into question in your life. What am I doing? What is my motivation? And then to be a professional athlete as he is and the grind that it is to play baseball. And yes, to realize unbelievable fruits from that. But Mike, I think a lot of that came into question and not a surprise for him to say, and the love of the game is back.
And by all accounts, a lot of that came from Robinson Cano, a guy who really took him under his wing even before he was here in Seattle. That Cano was a guy who had reached out to him and really tried to help a young Gene Segura who was dealing with a traumatic incident. And, you know, so I did find myself thinking about Gene after Robbie got busted and how he would handle a guy who is not just a teammate, but really a mentor and a savior in some ways to his life. To see Robbie go down like that had to be incredibly challenging for Gene Segura. And in no way has it affected him negatively. He didn't quit. He didn't crawl into a hole. Instead, he's the guy who comes sprinting out of the dugout to really do the same for a young Guillermo Heredia right afterwards. I thought that was important to see. And he's kept his sense of humor through all of this. And we heard it with Cano last year with, oh, Segura's too loud, right? But even with Danny Davenport Friday, they were asking him about being a hit machine. And I think you hear some of that personality come out.
I don't know. I think that name comes from when I was playing Arizona. They put him, you know, I don't realize I'm that kind of guy, the hitting machine. It's tough to be a hitting machine, you know. And, you know, the guys start calling me like that, and, I mean, I can't do anything about it. I just stick with the name, and people like it. People love calling me like that. I just... stay thinking like that. Stay
I'll away. Tell you this. If you were to design a hitting machine, it would not be built like Gene Segura.
No, probably not. Maybe it's just the hands.
Maybe.
Robbie says that all the time. His hands are unlike anything.
They are very quick.
His ability to get the bat on the ball in any time, in any place, in any direction, any way is just pretty darn unique.
This comment really reminded me of James Paxton when he was on the chatting cage recently and they asked him about the Big Maple nickname.
When he was on what?
What? You guys have never heard of the chatting cage?
What's the chatting cage?
I know the
cage?
Wheelhouse.
The MLB does a segment called the chatting cage where they let fans ask players questions.
Okay.
So it's like the batting cage, but it's the chatting cage.
Get it? Nice. Clever, MLB. Okay. You guys are clever.
Okay, so you were, of course, watching the chatting cage.
He's watching the chatting cage because
there is
James
no media that on it.
Do you and your mom have a chatting cage time also? Like,
no,
is that
don't.
Like your
no.
book club? Like,
nope.
Hey, mom, chatting cage time.
Oh,
all right,
hey, mom, we got to put the mint juleps down from the garden here, and we've got to get in and watch
Virgin
the chatting cage, of course.
Virgin
of course.
Mint juleps?
No, I'm kidding. You just okay. The point of this was that on the chatting cage, James Paxton was asked about his nickname, and he said something very similar, which was, well, this is how it came about, and the fans really love it, so I go with it.
Right.
Yes. Not necessarily saying, I love this nickname,
no.
but you know what? It makes other people happy, so it makes me happy.
Do you like either of those two nicknames, the big Maple or the Hitting Machine?
Gene, the Hitting Machine?
Do you like either of them?
I love the Big Maple.
You
I
do?
I think Gene, the Hitting Machine, gets a little repetitive sometimes, but I still love it.
But Lydia, to your point, doesn't it kind of fit their personalities?
Absolutely.
We know those in our lives. We've been around some that like their nicknames, and it almost becomes them and
right.
their identity.
I
and
can
it,
name one.
And it kind of,
I won't because
no,
it'll
you
just
won't.
Make him start talking.
No, you won't. But it just kind of fits them, and they like the whole ego of it and everything else. And then you've got a Paxton and a Segura like, no, yeah, not for me.
It's tough to be a hitting machine.
Gene, the hitting machine.
So he has been great, and obviously what Mitch Haniger has done. But one other thing from Segura and that interview he did on Friday, which is a really good job they did on
Friday.
How did
Danny Davenport do this?
I don't know.
Huh? Those afternoon guys, those doggone guys get just so the guys get so comfortable. Can we try to make Bobby comfortable in like 20 minutes? Can we just try? No, we can't be them. We got to be who we are.
We can't do that.
Can we do our best to just make him comfortable?
That's not what we're good at.
I'm going to do my best.
We're good. We can talk to some of the managers and the general managers and owners and stuff, but we never make players comfortable at all.
No.
They do such a good job of it, and they get great stuff out of it. And of all the things Segura said, look, I like hearing about his rediscovered love for baseball. I like hearing him and his personality. Obviously, I've loved seeing what he's done, but just like I was giving a little credit earlier to Scott Service, so was he, and the kind of environment that Scott has created here for this team.
He's talking to us, hey, you okay? Family-wise, you know, everything going well for you? I said, okay. But, you know, Scotty's been great. Right now, we're in the tough stretch, and we need to stay positive. We can, you know, to get that, you know, that negative news away, you know. Still, we're going to miss Robbie for 80 games, and we need to continue to battle. I mean, we're right here close. We're not too far for the race, and let's do it.
Remember, that's Friday before they had won the three straight. They're coming off a couple of losses, right? You know, they lost the last game of the series to Texas. They lose in really tough fashion on Thursday night, a game they should have won.
Yep.
And that's him at the ballpark the next day. And I know this is one of those things. First of all, there's two directions to go here. One, Brock, is credit to Scott Service for the amount of time he spends getting
Scotty,
to
please.
Know guys.
Scotty.
And then the amount of time he spends forcing guys to get to know each other. I think it pays dividends when you have a tough week like
that. Dad, right? That's what dads do.
Dad move.
Yeah, that's for sure dad's life.
The other is, you know, every time you see a guy kind of laughing and chuckling on a baseball field, even when his team is struggling or has lost a game or two, just remember that oftentimes that is just as good as the opposite, if not better. And I know that we're mad and we get upset and we desperately want them to be as mad as we are after every single loss. They just can't afford to be.
No, I get that. But this team, you know, unlike a lot of its predecessors for a lot of years, Mike, that had a little bit of that Ian Kinsler. Part of it was because you had young guys that couldn't play and they're finding their way. For a bunch of years, unfortunately, the Smokes and the Ackleys and the Monteros, they just never materialized, you know, and so they didn't have the juice or the experience to kind of bring it to life. And I don't think you're going to get that vibe from this team or from a fan base watching this team, because they're willing to do it on the other end. They're willing to express it. They're not holding back. I mean, the number of times in that dugout this season, I can say this. Where are they at? 27-19. I can say, I think, pretty honestly, through 46 games, there's been more expression of emotion in that clubhouse than in any of their seasons, any of their 162 games, any of them. You know, if you look at just the cumulative of what it means when Dee and Healy and Segura and Heredia and Zanino, they're like willing to be the anti-Kinsler. Oh, I've been there, I've done it. And Ian Kinsler, by the way, if people are wondering who that name, he was a former Detroit Tiger, and he's an old guard. Like, you never express. It's not okay to express, because you're going to have peaks and you're going to have valleys, and you got to live right in the middle. You know, but there are some times that it's, you know, okay, and I think Scott wants that. If he's a dad in his home, we talk all the time in this building where we're sitting and Bobby's coming in 15 minutes, we talk all the time about Pete. And what does Pete always want? He wants his guys to self-express and to emote and do it. So does Scott. Scott has really asked those guys some ways to come out of their skin to do it, and man, there certainly are, and winning a lot of games helps.
A lot of text messages coming in, 710-710, powered by Coors Light, including this one. You're absolutely right, Brock. I think we all need to thank Chris Peterson for the Mariners' success this year. Let's do an early version of good news, bad news, no news.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
Yeah, early edition today of Good News, Bad News, No News. Why? Because Bobby Wagner's going to be with us at 8:30, and we're going to leave some extra time to see if he wants to stick around through the end of the 8 o'clock hour. So, guys, what do we got?
Good news, bad news, no news.
Well, Brock just said it. With three wins over the weekend, the Mariners are now 8 games over .500.
Yeah, it's great news, and they're doing it in a comeback variety, 12 of them, which is fourth in the American League, something that they, you know, never done in great numbers over the last decade or so. Number two, they're doing extra innings. They're 3-0, and Eddie Diaz has been completely nails in those situations, and they're doing it with a new cast of young characters that, to me, is the most exciting of all of this. The Seahawks team here in this building is going to turn over. It's going to have to turn over around Russell Wilson. The Macho Cuatro of just a few years ago, Fernando Rodney and Felix Hernandez and Nelson Cruz and Robbie Cano, we're watching a turnover. We're watching a new core, a if Segura and Haniger and Zanino and Diaz and Paxton take this thing. And that, to me, is the most exciting part of this 27-19 start.
It is good news, and I'll add to it as well. Not only are they alone in second place now by a game and a half up on Anaheim, who's lost 7 of their last 10, they're alone in that second wild card by the exact same amount. And in the meantime, Toronto has really faltered. A team that looked like they were going to be in the hunt, and now, not right now. Toronto now below 500. They're looking about talking about possibly trading Josh Donaldson and blowing that thing up. And so you may actually be down to three teams competing for two spots. Boston and New York will get, one of them will win the division, the other a wild card. And then really Seattle and Anaheim right now stepping up for the other wild card. We'll see whether Oakland can find their way into it as well. But good news to see Toronto faltering at the same time.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Vegas Golden Knights are going to the Stanley Cup Finals in their first year of existence.
Oh, man. Mixed news. I mean, I'm really happy for them and for their long-suffering fans, obviously. It's amazing to see after years and years of pain and misery, they're finally going to get to see what that cup feels like when you're there. But I don't know that it's good news for Seattle specifically to see this happen. I mean, I think it's... There's some flukiness to this that Marc-Andre Fleury was given away and has been as good as he's been in net. You know, they were a bunch of other guys and big contracts that they took on, and somehow it's all just sort of come together. I think it's created an unreasonable expectation for an expansion franchise. And I am also worried that they're going to change some of the expansion rules and make it harder for the Seattle team to get good quickly. But, look, good news for them. They're a fun team to watch, and I think they got as good a shot as anybody, obviously, of winning the Cup.
Yeah, as I argue with myself over this, and I find myself doing that quite a bit now.
It's nice to hear.
Yes, I'm going back and forth like a ping pong table. I think ultimately for Seattle, this is great news because it's going to bring and cast a wider net for the NHL. You know, the NBA is thriving. The NFL is the giant. We're going, you know, Major League Baseball is spotty. It's doing it on a regional, local level just fine. Nationally, not at all. But we're going to welcome the NHL here in just a couple years. And I would love to do it as it is growing and it is going in the right direction. And I think Vegas and just the impetus behind it and all of this conversation is a wonderful thing for the league. That's good news.
A couple of years. I mean, we won't have the games, but it sounds like we're going to be welcoming them in a couple of weeks in terms of an actual announcement.
And name?
Maybe. No, I doubt it. I think you'll just sort of start the process of the name, though.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Seahawks have their first of the organized team activities out in Renton today.
Yeah, good news. Phase three, the final phase, the third and final phase of the offseason. About 3 weeks here of organized team activities. What is that? That's practice. It's practice. Now, having to do it, they've done it in the ball caps. I don't know if they can wear helmets yet, but it is 11-on-11. It is 7-on-7. It is 1-on-1. It is absolutely a two-hour training camp-esque practice of competition. The first of 9 of those before mini camp, and that's it, and it's go time. Good news.
So many activities!
I think it's good news, but listening to most of you guys out there, it is no news. So I will speak for the people, Brock.
Oh, really?
This is no news. Okay. It doesn't matter whether people show up. It's voluntary, and therefore it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Right?
Well, ask Bobby that.
I mean, I know everybody, that's what people keep saying. Every time we talk about, you know, attendance and who shows up and whether it means anything, all I hear about is that it's voluntary and it doesn't matter. So, no news.
It's making my head spin how many activities we can do.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Mariners added a bald eagle to James Paxton's bobble.
Put a bird on it.
By the way, great news. And who is the bobblehead czar of Seattle?
Titus?
Yeah. Yeah. Titus yesterday. Lengthy discussion. How did they add a bobblehead? He first of all saw the bobblehead with the eagle. How did they know to do that?
Put a bird on it.
How did they? he really is like, how did they know to put the eagle? They didn't know that was going to happen. How did they know before the season when they have all the bobbleheads figured out? Because he knows what bobblehead nights are. He knows every one of them they're having. How did they know to add that to the mold?
Prescient.
Huh?
They're very prescient.
That's great
Kevin
news.
Martinez says sooth. You may not know. Mariners marketing guru and soothsayer, Kevin Martinez. I don't know. Good news. I'm not a bobblehead guy. Whatever.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Cavs won Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight in Cleveland.
They won it tonight. Howdy. Talking about saying sooth. Good news. We will at that point be one win closer to the shocking Cavs-Golden State finale that everybody thought would never occur.
Oh, you are so silly, Howdy. You are so, so silly.
I'm so hungry for Daniel.
We shall see. I believe the 41-point win was the largest in Golden State's postseason history as Steph Curry went off last night. And yes, the Cavs will play Game 4 and try to even the series in Cleveland tonight. Good news.
Steph Curry have 17 points in a quarter?
Yeah, he went crazy.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. Is that it? That's all we got?
UW softball swept away the weekend, and we'll welcome Alabama. Alabama, the Crimson Tide rolling in here. Roll Tide for the Super Regional this weekend.
How good is that team, huh? How good is that?
They're pretty phenomenal. How much did it look like it was snowing on television with all the cottonwood, by the way? It was
Poplar. Oh my gosh,
it was blowing every. Is that what it is? Is it not cottonwood?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well,
I thought I heard someone say poplar.
Well, whatever it was kind of a crazy scene. They're really good. Heather Tarr went to school when I was there at Washington. She was a ball player. She's done a phenomenal job keeping that program going. A lot of fun. A lot of fun to see. A lot of good news. What a good news weekend. You know, the royal wedding was awesome. Your birthday party for Cecily was awesome.
Yeah.
Great sporting events. Just had a great weekend, man.
Sure was.
Great weekend.
All right. You can listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers.
We're going to make Bobby comfortable at
How?
All costs.
We're not good at that.
Well, we're going to be.
It's not our specialty.
Mike, I'm not going to just be satisfied with not being good at some. We're going to do our best.
No. Danny, Dave, and Moore have that market.
I understand they
know,
do.
Know thyself.
I'm not trying to
know
be.
Know thyself.
I'm not trying to be Danny, Dave,
yeah,
and Moore.
Yeah, you are. You're jealous,
but
and you're trying
we
to
can learn,
get into their headspace.
We can learn from others.
I don't think we can.
We can get into maybe the Danny, Dave, and Moore alter egos.
Something about an old dog and new tricks, and I don't
be
see
unlimited, Salk.
We are going to be hashtag unlimited.
If you play that for Bobby Wagner, I will walk right out. Right in the middle. I don't care how uncomfortable it makes anybody. You play that Russell Wilson unlimited sound for Bobby Wagner, and I will get up and I will walk directly out of the studio, out to my car, and start driving home. And you can do the rest of the show by yourself. Because I'm not participating.
Well, I'm not going to throw to it. So if they do it, it's not my fault.
I don't want
and you're not leaving. You're
I
not
will.
Quitting on me.
No, you'll have to have Bobby restrain me.
You can't quit me.
I might. If they do that, I will quit away. Bobby Wagner joins us next on Brock and Salk.
Put a bird on it.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right, we are here today at Seahawks facility. Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle and on 710sports.com as well. Of course, this hour is brought to you by Precore Home Fitness. And you may hear a little rustling. That's Bobby Wagner. Seahawks middle linebacker sitting down with us here for a little chat. Hi, Bobby. Good morning.
What's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
It's just a linebacker ready to run through the A gap and just hit a quarterback right there.
You're right.
With the headsets. How you feeling these days, Bobby? First, what is this? The first phase? First day of phase three? Is that what this is called around here?
Yeah, phase three. We get to go out there and go against the offense. So I'm feeling good. It's good against go against the offense and finally get out of this. But it's not real football, so. it's a lot of pretend. We got to fly by guys instead of hit them and, chase down Russell.
I can't help but notice that you sat down and there's an old copy of a roster there. That's just right before the draft. That's like the April 23rd version of the roster.
Right.
You know everybody on the team these days? I mean, it looks like there's a lot of new faces. You're not looking through that roster to try to figure out who's who, are you?
Nah, it's just, you got to see who left and who, I know everybody from the defensive side. I know everybody that's here. There's a lot of guys on offense that's new, but we're so separated during these periods that you don't get to really interact or see the other side of the ball. So it's like this is the first day we actually get to see the other side of the ball,
right?
Because we're not allowed on the field when they're doing their drills. So it's just like we kind of separated. So when they go on the field, we're in the rooms, and when they're in rooms, they on the field. So it's like. It's literally when you see him, it's just in passing. Like, hey, what's up, Russ? All right, have a good day. Because you probably won't see him for the rest of the day. So,
how different does this defense feel now, at least personnel-wise?
For me, it's different because there's a lot of guys, a lot of faces that, you're used to seeing that you not going to see. I got my dog KJ, and we got a couple of the guys that we're excited to build that camaraderie with, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Does it feel kind of weird to be one of the older guys? Do you feel like a vet? Like, you know, it wasn't all that long ago. It's 2012 and incredible run and everything that you all have accomplished. And yet, as you said, a lot of the guys, you know, that made that run around you, both in front of you and behind you in that secondary, going to be some different places are done. Do you feel like the vet around this building?
I mean, you feel a little older and... I don't feel old, but you know, you kind of like when a guy comes in here and he's born in 1996, you're kind of like, okay, now I can see how the older guys felt when we came in and I said I was born in 90,
right?
And they was born in 85. So, it's fun, man. It's, you kind of like look and see, like, was this how I was when I got here? Because even music, when they put music on, and it's like, what are y'all listening to? And you got to be like, okay, now I get it. I get what...
That's the mark of an old man right there.
I'm like, I get it. You know, when we came in listening to what we were listening to, and they're saying, what y'all listening to? So it was funny because Me Bang said that to me one day when I was a rookie. So I had to tell him. Man,
would you
I
have on
said
you Taylor
it.
Swift? Would you?
Nah.
No.
Nah.
Yeah. Yeah, Taylor Swift. You nailed that one.
No, I had
a concert here tomorrow night at CenturyLink. Yeah. I don't know that. I'm not going. No, I'm not. Don't look
going.
At me. No.
How did you know that?
The basketball moms. I was sitting in the stands yesterday with my seventh grader and all the basketball moms, and they're
all talking about
it. Yeah.
So you blaming it on them?
No excuse.
Excuses are for losers, man.
I mean, I think, you know, for everybody, I think his phone just alerted that Taylor Swift's coming in. So he has an alert and everything. Yeah. So
hey, you mentioned KJ specifically. It's Bobby Wagner is joining us here on Brock and Salk. You mentioned KJ specifically. What is that level of friendship like, both on and off the field, in terms of knowing where each other are going to be at every moment, but then also how it translates both off the field and back onto it again?
For me, it's amazing because when I first got here as a rookie and he was here, he was in his second year. So he was still learning and, you know, a lot of the stuff as a rookie was fresh to him, and we're about the same age. So for him, we were able to grow together. Like, we've been growing together. And each year, you know, we've tried to get better and better and better. And, you know, it's cool to have a guy to challenge you, you know, because you're right there with him. It's not like he's so far removed from you. It's like you going through the growing pains together. So it's like we can... You know, like I said, we can grow together. It's like, you know, we have the same, you know, we're going through the same family stuff. We're trying to deal with the same thing. So naturally, you kind of grow off the field as well. You know, you get to know each other's family. You get to know, like, what's the day to day, because it's like we chill so much and we have like that type of relationship that, you know, we know what gets him going. He knows what gets me going. And it's fun because we can come in here and maybe I'm off or maybe he's off, and all it takes for him to say one thing, and then it's like, all right, and we back on and kind of be nice to practice, and it's fun.
And then on the field, you probably don't even have to say anything at times.
Yeah, no, on the field is crazy because you've been playing for so long. You look at him, it's like, all right, you know, hey, I'm about to do something. Cover me. Okay. I got you. And then vice versa. It's like, you know, we're playing really, really well off each other. And, yeah, man, it's just fun because we kind of think the same. We know the defense. And, you know, it's just us kind of out there running the show.
We don't know yet exactly who will be the third linebacker out there, but Shaquem Griffin is such an incredible story, and he's going to be one of the guys sort of attempting to play that role next to you. Have you had a chance to meet him, be around him, and what do you expect to see from him out on the field?
Yeah, you know, we've been kind of, you know, he came in last Monday. The rookies came in last Monday, so we got a chance to kind of be around him, chance to kind of learn. We haven't really seen, like, today will be the first time we see him on field outside of the drills, but in drills he looks great. And it's been fun. You know, you've been poking fun at him because, you know, I got two rookies. You got the, you know, the twins, too. So it's like, you know, you got to give them. Yeah,
can you imagine
stuff.
Playing this game with one arm?
You ever play with a cast? Do you ever break a hand in high school or college, or have to play with just?
I probably in college. I broke my forearm, and I tried to play the rest of the game. It was very, very hard. It's like, you know, you got one side of your body kind of like not working.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely tough, but I think with him, you know, he's done it, you know, for so long. It's, you know, it's an afterthought. He's not thinking about that because you're able to, you know, just like in anything else, like when you hurt something, your body compensates and it figures out how to maneuver. And you know, what we look at and see is not normal. It's normal for somebody else. So, that's kind of how I view it. You know, I don't necessarily see anything different.
It's like Saul and I. I mean, we both lost our memory. So now we just talk a lot.
Yeah, I don't even know what it's like to have a memory anymore.
And we have producer. Everybody else got to fill in the gap. So that's just what we know. How do you judge? How do you start to gauge these guys? You're right. It's hard now. It's not even real football. Even now, you guys are in hats and can't even have any contact. But how do you now, after all these years, Bobby, see these young guys come in? How do you start to judge or gauge your opinion of, man, this guy's a dog. This guy can be a part of this thing.
Me personally, I really don't. You don't gauge them until you put the pads on. But you get to know them as a person. You learn them as a person. You learn. You try to figure out. You know, what gets them going, what motivates them every day, you know, because you got to be motivated to come in here and do what we do. So you kind of figure those things out. It's like, okay, how are you mentally? So it's more diving into the mental side of everything and seeing, okay, what type of person this is, how does he think, you know, how does he, you know, you're going to be challenged out there. How do you kind of react to challenges and things of that nature? And then, you know, when the pads come on, then it's okay. Can he play?
Yeah, Bobby, from the outside, looking in, it looks like there's been a lot of change here this year. And I'm sure it feels like that inside. We're talking about the roster. But from the outside, it feels like last year was sort of the end of something and now maybe a new beginning. What did it feel like being in this locker room and on this team last year when for the first time you didn't make the playoffs? Things didn't really go the way you planned it. There were some injuries. There were some comments. Now there's been some bloodletting on the roster. What did it feel like?
It felt different. It felt, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, a lot of guys were hurt. So, you know, a lot of guys wasn't around because of injury, because of, you know, whatever the case may be. So, you know, you kind of look at the roster and you say, like, oh man, like what could have been if everybody was healthy? But, you know, each team kind of goes, you know, they have a year or have a time where, you know, unfortunate, you know, things happen. And, you know, Sherm doing what he did and Cam and Cliff and so on and so forth. It's like that was more of the thought, like, man, you know, like, you know, you wish you would have had those guys, but, you know, it's unfortunate events. But for me, it's like, you know, I think a lot of people are sleeping on the talent that we have, you know, in the room. So a lot of people saying it's a fresh start. It's just, you know, kind of that mentality. It's like, all right, you know, we have guys that left for whatever reason, and it's, you know, it is the next guy up mentality. So a lot of people that wanted a chance, that been really trying to get on that field, they have the opportunity to take advantage of it. And that's how I feel about it. It's like, you know, I'm happy for everybody. Everybody seems to be in a situation that they love and that they like, and so it's going to be fun. And I'm excited to play Sherm.
We're going to take a quick break. You're excited to play Sherm? Oh, just kind of throws that in. Hold on. I already stopped listening.
We're going to
take a break. Throw something like that out there.
So he's got to eat breakfast. Breakfast.
Are you going to play a little offense on that day? Like, see if we can just put you on the outside?
Maybe I get on special teams or something. If I see he's out there. You know, I know he likes to play one of the gunners or something like that. So maybe I just accidentally get on the field.
Maybe.
Just accidentally, not on purpose or anything.
You get a chance to see Jimmy this year.
Yeah, see Jimmy. Jimmy would be fun, too. You know, see if he fly a plane into the game.
All right, Bobby Wagner's going to stick around and talk to us for a few more minutes. We're going to take a quick break. We want to find out a little bit more about what makes him tick, a little bit more about this team as well. Don't go anywhere. It's Bobby Wagner here with Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN
Seattle.
We'll talk
a little Taylor Swift.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
The ball is up in the air. Hit. The ball's rolling around. The Seahawks pick it up. It's Bobby Wagner. Down to the 10. Down to the 5. He is in. Touchdown! Seahawks. Two players down out of the 21s of Seahawks. I know the Colts are going to say, Brissett's arm was going forward, but Bobby Wagner scoops that ball up, broke two tackles, and scoots in, and that might be a backbreaker if, in fact, it stands.
That play sitting with us is Brock and Salk with Bobby Wagner in studio as well. What's the most fun thing to do on the football field?
Score touchdown.
Is it?
It's pretty fun.
You like that better than just a knockout shot?
Nah, knockout shot's pretty good.
You like that better?
QB sack.
QB sack.
Play at the goal line where you stop somebody from getting into the end zone.
That was good. That was Arizona. That one's fun because it's like if your back bends at any given point, it's a touchdown and we lose the game.
Do you feel every single rep you ever put in the weight room in one of those moments?
Nah, I just feel very strong. Like, you just like, okay, like, those squats help.
Do you feel it? Because, like, a Nelson Cruz will tell you when he hits one 500 feet and it's just clean like that, you don't even feel it. When you hit someone, Todd Gurley, David Johnson, that kid, you hit one of those guys like that in that moment, do you feel it?
You feel good because in, you know, those cases, it's like somebody coming at you full speed. And with Todd, it was the, I think this is the one y'all talking about, the fourth down stop.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so it's like, it's the matter of, like, if you bend, you have to stay on the field or you lose the game. So I think it's more of the, dang, you were strong enough to stop that play. And those type of players, because they're really dope players, like, so, you know, let you know, okay, he's kind of strong.
I wonder if that feels like a SWAT in basketball, like a big, like somebody goes up for a dunk and you're able to block that shot.
I would think you'd probably feel just like that.
Right.
Like,
I mean,
if somebody
I know
comes
what that feels,
up,
but
yeah, I mean, we can lower the court, I mean, lower the basket and let you kind of feel that. You know.
Do you know what that feels like?
I do, actually.
While someone's dunking?
While somebody's dunking, yeah.
Really?
Well, it was interesting.
I don't jump with LeBron or anything, you know. I'm not doing that.
How long did you play basketball?
I played basketball. No, I still play basketball. It's all my life. It was the first sport, my first love. I, you know, never really put it down. The reason kind of why I put it down was because I seen, you know, more people going to college playing football than I did playing basketball.
What was your childhood? So you grew up in Ontario, California?
Yep.
Is that right? I went to school near there. So I've been around Ontario. I remember the old airport there.
Yep.
And so Ontario Mills and that whole area.
Yeah.
What was life like for you as a kid in Ontario?
It was good. We started off near in LA, and then we moved away. So, you know, you should know this, like the cow smell, you had to get used to that because it was terrible.
Chino smells a couple times a year.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
But, it was good. You know, you had, it was an interesting time because at that time, like, nobody felt like anybody from that area was good at sports. So, like a lot of people felt like you had to be from L.A. to get recognized. So, we felt like we were part of, like, it was like me, Omar, Marvin Jones, like Vontaze. It was a bunch of guys over in that area that was like, okay, we kind of help, you know, put this area, you know, on the map. Because now we go back to our schools, and there's so many schools that come in there to check us out versus, like, we had to have our coaches beg the schools to come, you know, over to check us out. I enjoyed it. It was fun.
You got to enjoy Ken Norton being back.
Oh, man, it's amazing. It's night and day.
What's that look and sound like?
He just got so much energy all the time, positive energy all the time. And then it's kind of like the person that helped you grow, leave and come back. And so, you know, he left and, you know, did his thing and he grew as a you know, person, as a man, as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes back and then he left us. And we grew as men, as players. So we come back with this new kind of way that we look at things. And it's a more of a respect, you know, for him. Because when last time he was here, we was rookies. So we didn't know nothing. You know, he coming back. You know, KJ's year 8 and I'm year 7. And so it's just respect. It's love. The energy. It feels amazing. you know, I'm so happy that I'm back.
You mentioned Cliff earlier. Cliff and Bennett are gone in front of you, and behind you we'll see with Cam. Hopefully he can come back. Sherm is gone. On the outside, people say, well, now it's Bobby's team. Now it's those linebackers. I mean, Earl is still going to be here, but Ken Norton's back as D coordinator. Everything you just mentioned. Can this now be, whereas you and KJ did your business, but it's all about the Legion of Boom and all the sacks, can it now be, from just a voice standpoint, built right in the middle of this defense?
Personally, I think that's more of an outside thing, in my opinion, because I never felt like that. Because at the end of the day, especially having Coach Norton as your coach, it's like you come from an era where the middle linebacker and the linebackers, like, they run the show. They call the plays. They, you know, stand in front of the huddle. They do those different things. Now, you had different voices, you know, in the secondary and the front end. But at the end of the day, you know, before each play got started, it started with the person who was calling the calls.
True.
So that's how I looked at it. You know, outside of everything else, like, you know, like how the media and everything portrayed it, that's what y'all thought. I didn't think that. I never thought that. Because at the end of the day, it's like you got all these voices, strong voices, opinionated voices.
Really?
You know what I mean? But they had to, you know, you had to hear the play. You know, these voices had to hear the play. And I was...
Did the corners always have to hear the play? Because half the time I'd see Richard come nowhere near the defensive.
Well, I mean, but we play with...
Is that because he didn't want to hear you?
Richard, you know, Richard's Richard. You know what I mean? So, you know... I used to get on him about that too. Like, I'm not, but at the end of the day, you have to, you know, have to know the play. But you know, I play with Rich for so long. Like, you know, I just put up a sign for him. Like, he ain't got to come in here because I know. Well, I don't know, but you watch him contest a fade ball way down against Larry Fitzgerald, and then as he's jogging, you want to ask him to come to the huddle. I'm like, nah, I signal the play in because I didn't run that far. You know what I mean? Because you know, it's be some plays where he does that three or four times in a row while I'm in the box just, you know, scraping and making tackles and stuff. So I'm not about to make them come this way.
You know, you mentioned earlier, and we just have a couple more minutes with you. You mentioned earlier that you will barely get a chance to even see the offense until today. You haven't really talked to any of those guys. But by all accounts, they're making a concerted effort, at least with the personnel decisions this mm-hmm. year, to be more physical, to be more of a run-first football team, get back to some of that physicality. What will that do to the defense?
I think it's going to help us kind of, you know, start on our run defense earlier because they're so committed to it. So now it gives us a chance, especially with the new faces, to kind of like implement our style of play because we stop the run first. Like, you want to stop the run. So if you have the offense with the mindset of we have to run the ball and you have the defense with the mindset where we have to stop the run, then it's like, okay, you get our best versus your best, and every single day we have to figure that out. So,
because there are a couple moments last year, and I don't mean to bring up painful moments, but there's two plays that stand out from this defense last year, and I don't know if they're the two that would pop to your mind, but one is that 3rd and 11 running play that Jacksonville had for the first down, and the other would be the run from the Rams, Todd Gurley running right down the middle of the field that just said, all right, this does not look like the Seahawks.
Yeah.
This is not the Seahawks defense that we've watched for a long time that absolutely closes the door on those two runs. Do those burn a little bit and kind of give this team some motivation and make some changes in that regard?
They definitely burn from the standpoint of especially like the play. It's like it's 3rd and 11. Like the likelihood for an offense to succeed on that play is not likely. And like you said, most of them, they're like, okay, we're just going to run the ball, get off the field.
Take some time.
But that's kind of what I just said, you know, earlier. Like that mindset. It's like, you know, we were kind of in that mind frame of like people coming in and, you know, not knowing our style of play. So we had to kind of, you know, reiterate that. So that's kind of what it is. I know we got
to
go.
We got to go, and you got to get out there. We can talk to you for a while, man.
Before we get off, I would like to take this time to shout out to Earl Thomas. You know, I think he's an amazing player. I think he's an amazing person. You know, he's a Hall of Famer. And just let him know that, you know, we over here, you know, wishing for the best in that situation. And we're thinking about him. And I just want him to know that from this end.
Why do you say that?
Just because he needs to know. I feel like it's you know, he needs to know that we appreciate him over here because he's a, you know, a talent that, you know, you're not going to ever see another person like him, you know, ever again play the football field. There's nobody that's going to be able to start from one side of the hash and be able to get all the way to the other side of the field. So,
were you happy that he stayed this offseason?
Yeah. You know, I wasn't, you know, I didn't want nothing to happen. Obviously, you know, people don't know this, but we get alerts just like y'all get alerts. So, you know, it's not like, you know, the organization sends us a text saying, hey, this alert's about to go out. It's like, okay, I could be watching a TV show and get an alert and look up and be like, wait, that happened to us. That's our team, you know? So we, just for everybody to know, we find out sometimes like y'all find out. We find out on ESPN or we find out on our cell phones. You know, you get the alert pop up. And so, yeah, I'm looking and seeing like, okay, you got this, that, and the third. And you got to understand from my perspective, every time my phone alerted, it was somebody getting cut, somebody getting traded. And it's just like, oh, man, I got to call him. I got, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I was happy that he was able to stay. And so, and yeah.
Is that to say that Earl can now put his name back in his mouth?
Huh? You had to go there, man.
I mean, I had to ask.
Come on, man. That's all water under the bridge,
that's,
man.
I figured that.
Look, he's still living in the past, man.
Oh, man.
No, then the ball dropped in 2018. It's a whole new season, a whole new year, whole new season.
No, you should hear him say it. Play that drop.
No, buddy. Don't. No, Bobby doesn't need to hear that. No, that's embarrassing for everybody. Bobby doesn't
want
to hear that.
Hey, I just want everybody to know he's turning so red in here, too.
Bobby doesn't want to see that.
He's turning so red.
Don't play that, Leo.
Y'all need to see his shirt, too, so it's matching his shirt.
Oh, man.
It's crazy.
Bobby, how dare you? Go outside and go hit somebody or something.
You brought it up.
Me? Well, he's the one who said it. What am I supposed to do?
Bobby. Did I say it?
Well, I don't know.
Technically, it was deleted, so it's not there anymore.
Ah, well, then it must never happen. Bobby, goodbye. Thank you very much. There's Bobby Wagner. We're super late. We'll be back. It's Brock and Salk.